And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi. Laughing about Space Whales. A weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, low on fuel and power in deep space, the Ghost Crew encounters massive, mysterious creatures, fucking space whales, whose lives are threatened by a mining operation. There will be Hera's down with killing some animals, and Ezra has to save the whales. But not from Hera, though. We're talking the call this week. Space whales. How you
I haven't
doing?
Seen that side of Hera yet. She doesn't like space whales at all.
No, she doesn't. And I was just like, wow, Hera's really down for killing some space whales.
Yeah.
How you doing, Chris? You have a good week?
Yeah. It was exhausting at work. It was super hot this week. Well, for up here.
You guys have been in a heat wave. Like, you guys have been hotter in New York than we've been in Georgia.
Oh, really? Well, I know, people I know in Florida have been literally roasting, you know. I mean, they've been in the hundreds. And we had a couple days it felt like it was 100. But I was also in, you know, a rib joint kitchen. Let me just tell you, the dumpster at our place was a brewing the last couple weeks. So it was kind of tiring. Work was kind of tiring, but I always have fun at work. So, you know, that wasn't bad. But like at home, I've gotten a lot done and I completed a year long Star Wars project.
What is it?
Saturday night. I saw Return of the Jedi with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra playing the score along with it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Just completing the original trilogy. So yeah, it was a little more than a year ago. They spaced them out, the first three, well, episode 4, 5, and 6 between a year. So there was roughly 6 months between Star Wars and Empire and then Empire and Jedi. So Scott McGregor and Tina, his girlfriend, and I all went to see Return of the Jedi at the Philharmonic. For some reason, we sat maybe 25 feet from where we sat last time. So I don't know if it was our positioning or if it was just the different, it was three different conductors in this. But the orchestra was noticeably louder, almost to the point of like drowning out the movie. Whereas in the first two, the orchestra was almost at the level where it played right. It sounded like it was mixed right into the movie.
It might be how, theater major here. Yes. It might be how the actual building is built.
Right. Because, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Because depending on how the actual building is shaped, how things are positioned and stuff like that, you might have just been hitting like an acoustic pocket where it's just a little bit louder just because they're hitting you differently.
It was not just a little bit louder. It was almost rock and roll. It was, you could hear our first time in Star Wars, we were right up front. We were like in the fourth row and it was really quiet. And Empire,
the sound waves are going over you.
Right. We were sitting just under the everybody, so everything was passing over our heads.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clearer because we were closer. The second time we were in the mezzanine all the way over to the left, and it was kind of, I mean, you could hear everything. It was fine. But this time we were in the mezzanine and just over to the right, about 20 or 30 more feet, and maybe like a row back. Maybe we might have been around the same row, but it was just I also think maybe they had the orchestra play louder because of the three scores. This is the lesser of the three. Not that it's a bad score. It's a fantastic score, but louder and more up and up front and in your face, it was a lot more noticeable. And I noticed people before were cheering and applauding and reacting to the movie. This time they were reacting to the movie and to particularly beautifully performed sequences or nice sequences of music that were exciting. People would applaud afterwards. And I think it was because it was louder. But it was fun. There was actually, when they went into the Ewok village, one of the sound effects that I thought they would leave as a diegetic sound effect on the soundtrack was the sound of just like ambient drummers and music being played in the Ewok village. Yeah, they played that like perfectly. I mean, it was all the percussion section basically doing it. But yeah. It was pretty cool.
I want to go to one of those one day.
Yeah, they're touring around all the time, so all you have to do is pay attention and it'll come to your town eventually. And I know Scott Rifen saw Force Awakens and I know that I've heard of the prequels. So it's you could get like and they should have Last Jedi ready by now.
See, that's the thing. It's the pay attention part, because it's one of those things that I'll sit down and open the paper at like 8 o'clock and 9. They're like, the Star Wars Symphony's in town today, and I'm just like, fuck.
No, you got to get to the You got to go to the Philharmonic's website, you know, and see their schedule for the year or whatever to catch it.
I know. I had a fun weekend. San Diego Comic-Con is yes. A great way to make me not productive.
Not that you were there, but...
No, but like all attention. The news and stuff. Like a fucking Hawkeye show! Fucking Hawkeye! If you guys makes don't know, sense. Hawkeye is my favorite Avenger. And it looks like by the artwork, it looks like it's going to be roughly based on like David Asia and Matt Fraction's run, which is my favorite run of Hawkeye.
Is it going to be the same actor?
Huh?
Same actor?
Yep, it's gonna be Jeremy Renner, and then it's gonna have Kate Bishop in it, and it's Kate. I love Kate, but they haven't cast Kate Bishop yet, so we're gonna have Kate in it, and all they need now is Lucky the Pizza Dog. They must have Lucky in there. Please give me Lucky the Pizza Dog, or I'm gonna be very sad and very upset. I was like, do not give me a Hawkeye without Lucky. Lucky must be in this movie, in this TV show, so... also, like, Steven Universe got an awesome trailer. She-Ra got an awesome trailer. DuckTales has a fucking multiverse. The new show, DuckTales, yeah. They're combining Darkwing Duck, Tailspin, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and my brain just stopped. The Goofy show that used to run on Disney Afternoons. I can't. Goof Troop. It looks like they're combining all that under the DuckTales umbrella to have
I thought you meant a show that was Goofy and not a show about Goofy.
No, it's a Goof Troop.
You know, that Goofy looks show.
It looks like they're putting them all under the DuckTales umbrella. And they've already started doing that a little bit. They already had Don Carnage show up. They've already had Darkwing Duck. The Darkwing Duck episode of the new DuckTales is really good because it's a take on, like, fandom. And it's awesome. And it was so good.
the whole Disney Afternoon lineup used to be pretty good. I watched it sporadically. I had a roommate who was religious about it, though. He would like make sure his schedule at work meant that he got home in time for Disney Afternoon so he could watch them all through. He was like addicted to it.
Yeah.
This was in his 20s.
Oh, no, that's fine. Oh, I'm 31 and I love animation. I'm 31 and the things that I was most looking forward to from Comic-Con was Steven Universe, DuckTales, and She-Ra. That's all I wanted to know. I didn't care about any fucking else thing until Marvel was just like, here's everything. And I was like, oh, thanks, Marvel. This is amazing. But I just, when it comes to like Star Wars stuff, there wasn't a lot of news. I wanted to point out like two kind of things that they announced. One was the Lucasfilm publishing panel, and pretty much everything was lead up to Tross. Tross being,
right.
If you hear me say Tross, I'm saying Rise of Skywalker. I can't talk tonight. And pretty much like all the books between now and then are all Tross books. The really, really big one is from the Kylo Ren 4-part miniseries comics, and they described it as From Ben to Ren. And I was like, okay, that's cool, until I saw that fucking Charles Soule is writing it! Fucking Charles Soule! Who wrote that run of Darth Vader that I love so much. Like, his run of Darth Vader is one of my favorite pieces of Star Wars ever created. And if you haven't read it, you know all the Force mythology and Rebels? It's all the Force mythology and Rebels, but for the fucking bad guys. It's for the bad guys, and it's their side of all the crazy Force mythology, and it's so good. So when I saw that Charles Soule was writing it, I was like, wow, Charles Soule made me love Vader. He's probably the only person that can make me like Kylo Ren.
He must be the dark side master at Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Bring him in to do the dark side stuff.
But
he's got demons.
And
that's
then
why his name is Soule.
With an E at the end.
Oh, for so, evil.
Yeah. So
it's
yeah, the
for
comic
evil.
Yeah, the comic of is called The Rise of Kylo Ren. It starts in December. We don't know if it's monthly or weekly yet. There's also Journey to Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker Allegiances. That's going to be a weekly comic series starting in October. It's going to be 4 issues, so that's going to be kind of like filling in gaps. There's also, this one jumped out to me. So IDW and Marvel team up to do Star Wars Adventures, which is the all-ages kids line. And last year, they did a thing called Vader's Castle. And it was a 5-issue miniseries in October. And it was really good because it was a series of one-shots about, like...
Did it start out with Anakin on Tatooine making little sandcastles?
No, it starts with a group of smugglers. I think they're smugglers, if I remember correctly. And they crash land on Mustafar. And they have to... They're trying to find a way to escape from Vader's castle. Because
yeah,
they crash land.
Not a good... And, not probably did not work out well for them.
So, but what it... Well, keep in mind it's an all-ages book. But what happens is, like, every issue... So, like, there's the through story of them trying to escape. But then every issue to kind of, like, inspire each other, they tell a story... set in the Star Wars universe. So, like, the first one was Kanan and Hera, where a spirit possesses Chopper, and so Chopper is, like, running, like haunting the ghost. And then the second one was Han Solo. The third one was Obi-Wan and Count Dooku. And but anyway, like, so, like, it was a through line of them trying to escape, but they're inspiring each other with stories. And for a kid's comic, it was really good. And at some points, it got really dark. And so they announced for fall, Return to Vader's Castle, which I'm really excited about because the first one was so good for, you know,
it's,
for
it's
like
Escape from Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain.
Yeah. But the last one that I thought was that, because everything else is Tross books, so I don't really care. But there is one book that comes out August 6th, and it looks so cool. And it's called Star Wars Myths and Fables. And it's myths and fables within the Star Wars universe. So it's like stories that people would tell each other within the Star Wars universe. And like there's one called The Witch and the Wookiee. There's another one called The Black Spire. And I was just like, that's such a really cool idea of releasing like this myths and fables book of stories that people tell each other within the Star Wars universe.
Well, there was back in the Dark Horse days when they did Star Wars Tales. A lot of times there would be sort of stories like that in Star Wars Tales every once in a while, you know, somebody just a familiar story or something intersecting with a familiar story that was told from a different point of view with a little different turnout and, you know, from the teller's bias and stuff. So that's, yeah, I like those stories. I wish they'd bring Marvel Tales back.
Yeah. And the last one, if you're just into like super cute
Star Wars Tales, sorry. Marvel
like,
Tales.
And the last thing from the Lucasfilm press panel is just, if you happen to be into, like, super cutesy things, they're bringing out a kid's book called Creatures Big and Small. And it's just, like, a kid's book about all the different creatures in the Star Wars universe. And they have, like, Purrgil, which is, you know, important to this episode. They have Lothcats. They have Puffer Pigs. I saw a Gorg on the cover. And it just looks really just hella cute. It just looks so cute. So those are kind of the things that, like, stood out to me from the Lucasfilm press panel. That
you better have my boy in there.
Grievous isn't a... Huh?
Gore.
Oh, I don't know if they have gore, because they only showed a couple pictures of it. And then the other thing and also special thanks to Jonna Marie, who was tweeting this. I'm getting all this off of her Twitter, because she was there this weekend. Have you heard about the new Lucas Museum that's coming?
No, but I'm sure it's... Is it a traveling museum, or it's being built somewhere?
It's being built in California, and it's coming... and it's called the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, and it's a museum. I mean, I'm scrolling through Jonna's tweets, and they opened the panel with a quote from George Lucas, and it says, "Narrative art is created to affect the audience, to stir the imagination, awaken sympathies, and arouse passions. Narrative is one of the oldest and most important impulses in art. It is also the most popular form of art. Tracing the arc of narrative's art reveals how culture is created, reinforced, and then compelled to evolve." And so the whole point of this museum is mixing traditional high art with commercial art. So all the pieces features tells a story. So they have, like, classic artwork from, like, Egyptian hieroglyphics and how people told stories during the Renaissance. And then they also have other things like Norman Rockwell, how, like, a single piece of Norman Rockwell can tell an entire story of what's going on in that piece. But they also take it a step further with a lot of 1950s pop art. They also have comic book art being featured in this museum, stuff like Where the Wild Things Are, like those, like, children's books illustrations, because children's books tell stories. And I was like, this is such a really cool idea for a museum. So, because it's not just like, here's an art piece. It's like, no, here's a museum with, like, a cover of Iron Man, because it tells a story.
Yeah, and it gives you a real... Yeah, I thought it was going to be straight up on George Lucas's stuff, you know. Like,
oh, no, there's a for real Ralph McQuarrie section and a Star Wars section. Because
I'm sure there is, you know. I'm sure it sounds to me like maybe he might be like, I don't want to maintain my whole, like, Skywalker Ranch vaults of stuff and figured out a way to you know, get rid of a few warehouses full of stuff while at the same time. Setting up a really cool... I mean, it's so open-ended. They can just do so much.
Yeah, because what I'm looking at right now is they're going to have a cinema section of this museum.
I'm sure.
And Indiana Jones is going to be in there. So they're going to actually have the prop, the Ark of the Covenant, in the cinema section.
Oh, I'm sure there's going to be all sorts of fun stuff in there. It sounds sort of like in Cleveland, where they have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum type thing, you know. But it's more like this big, like, cultural arts center. And it has, like, you know, sections that are going to be there forever, but then there's always stuff changing around it. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, because I'm looking at,
not,
like,
going to make it out there. But...
I know. Like, I'm looking at one right now, and it's called At the Time of the Louisville Flood. And in the background on the wall, there's a painting that says World's Highest Standard of Living. There's no way like the American way. And underneath it, there's people in line for a bread line. And so it's like, it's all artwork that tells stories, whether it's like photography or if it's comic books or cinema, if it's hieroglyphics, if it's 1950s pop art. So
you can do anything.
Yeah.
As long as it's visual.
Yeah. And as long as it tells a story. And the building looks like a spaceship. I'm not seeing a release date of when it's opening or if they're still in the building phase. But yeah, so keep an eye out for it. It's going to be in California, and it's called the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. And it looks so cool. And I'm like, I would love to go out and see it. So.
Oh, I'm sold on the title alone, you know?
Yeah, I know.
You know.
Hey, if you live in California, they're hiring. So even though this will come out like a few weeks later. So yeah, that's all the stuff I saw at Comic-Con. You want to talk about some space whales?
Yes.
What'd you think of this episode?
I liked this episode when I first saw it, and I liked it more the second time. I'm not going to say we might have a sort of Bombad Jedi situation on that, because
That's a note of mine! This is my Bombad Jedi of Rebels!
Okay, so maybe we might have a Bombad Jedi situation brewing here, Hope. What's that? No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, I did not even glance at them. I had to pop them up just before the show because I've been so like busy doing stuff that I usually have it popped up the night before on my browser, so I remember to have it there. But no, I have not checked your notes.
Cause that's an Act 3 note of mine. But I'll get into that later. Yeah, for me, like, this was probably one of my least favorite episodes of Rebels when I watched it the first time through. I like it a little better the second time through. I'm still kind of meh on it. And a lot of it is just writing. Some of the writing in it is just not my cup of tea. And I'll get into it. So, like, I do like it a lot better the second time through. But it's still very low on the Rebels list for me because fucking space whales. I love the Purrgil. I love the Purrgil. I really do.
I don't feel this. The thing about Bombad Jedi is partially what I liked about Bombad Jedi was it was rubbing people's hatred of Jar Jar right back in their face and just jumping. Just embracing it embraced the Jar Jar. I don't think this episode is like that, you know. And it did, and I wasn't watching it going, ah, ha, ha, I like where they're good, you know. But I think it's a situation. I just refer to that situation because it sounds like I liked it a lot more than you did.
I will explain why this is my Bombad Jedi and what that means. If you are a brand new listener and you don't know what we mean by saying this is the Bombad Jedi of Rebels, I promise you I will explain it when I get to it in my show notes, because I actually wrote in what I mean by that in case you're a brand new listener.
Can go all the way back to our Bombad Jedi episode in Clone Wars early on in the show.
Yeah. I will also say, I know we usually talk about minor spoilers here and there, but if you're listening along while you're watching Rebels for the first time and you don't want major spoilers for the Rebels finale, you might want to skip this episode, because I'm going to be straight up talking about the Rebels finale in my notes. Because one of the reasons why this episode is so much better is because of the Rebels finale. So I just want to say this up front now that Rebels finale spoilers are coming in case you want to skip it. So you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. The Call is the 30th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on February 10th, 2016. It was written by Bill Wolkoff and directed by Mel Zweier. Some extra information for you. Boss Yushun is voiced by Fred... Oh my god, I'm going to butcher your name. Fred Tadaskior. Sorry, Fred. His other works include various voices in Clone Wars and Rogue One. He's also the voice of Bolzal Gruul, the Gorg salesman in Star Wars Resistance, as well as a slew of other animated shows. Boss Yushin is from the Yushin race. At the time of this recording, this is the only appearance of any Yushin. They were developing a Yushin character for Clone Wars named Pinto, but the series was canceled before he could make his appearance. The character was designed based on a piece of alien bounty hunter concept art drawn by Ralph McQuarrie for The Empire Strikes Back.
He must be a badass to be named Boss Yushin. It'd be like a person named Boss Human.
I know. I think they just never gave him an actual name.
Right, right.
So The next one is, whoever runs the StarWars.com and writes the trivia for the episode has both a sense of humor and apparently a love for grammar. Because one of the notes on StarWars.com is, the correct plural form of Purrgil is Purrgil. Hera misspeaks upon first seeing them, calling them Purrgils with an S. To be fair, there was a lot going on. So kudos to you, whoever wrote that piece of trivia.
I love that she corrected the grammar of a fictional Star Wars character.
I know. I mean, I don't know who raised it, I mean, but whoever wrote that, I was like, somebody went out of their way.
If I was writing it, I would want to do the same thing. So hats off.
I know. So I was like, kudos to whoever writes the trivia on StarWars.com, because you have a great sense of humor. In the script, the main Purrgil with the yellow head was referred to as Purrgil King. So you're going to hear me call him King Purrgil in this. In Rebels Recon for this episode, they talked about how this is an episode to show how Ezra is developing his skills, connecting him to nature and other living beings, a skill that he can understand. A skill that he can understand has his personal special skill as his personal special skills. I did not edit this. As his personal special skill that he understands at a greater degree than Kanan can. It is his natural ability, but he has been somewhat practicing and working at it throughout the show. They also didn't want to overplay this gift. That way, it's not a superpower. They also discuss how it added more ancient mythology to Star Wars. They started with the what if of what if the first hyperspace travel wasn't technology, but instead nature. You also know who likes nature over technology?
Nature calls.
I'm glad you rolled with that one. I didn't have a good segue for you, Yoda. Hi, Yoda.
Yoda's all natural. Organic. Yoda is.
So you don't trim to keep things nice for the ladies?
No, 70s style.
What?
Yoda has three hairs. All are 3 feet long.
And they just kind of curl around the top of your head like a comb over.
Comb over.
All right, well, your question is from me this week, Yoda.
A question for Yoda.
And I'm hoping this might, like, prompt some other people to have questions too and of this nature. So, have you ever had to give couples advice to anyone?
Many people Yoda has counseled. Many people in the art of love.
This is where you need to... I was about to say, this is where you need to be playing some, like, really, like, skeevy love music, but we usually do that every week for Yoda anyway, so...
Mace Windu, many girlfriends. Many girlfriends.
Really? Wet Blanket?
Many girlfriends.
Wet Blanket had secret girlfriends? Tell me. Spill, girl.
From Cy Snoodle to Yoda can't say.
Oh, come on, Yoda.
Yoda can say about Cy Snoodle because everybody. And Yoda means everybody.
Are you saying once you go snoodle, would no one else you canoodle?
No, once you go snoodle, happy noodle.
I like no one else you canoodle.
Self neck.
Self high five.
Oh, you knocked him right over.
Yoda, I'm sorry. Are you okay? Did you ever give any relationship advice to Obi-Wan and Satine?
Obi-Wan never talked about that. Yoda tried to find out. Yoda wanted details. Many details. Obi-Wan, zip, zip. Boring was Obi-Wan.
I'm guessing...
Qui-Gon. Stories he would tell.
He had that relationship with the cosmic force.
Oh.
He had plenty of star-crossed lovers, if you
will. Literally.
I have the puns tonight.
Star-crossed puns.
Star-crossed puns. All right, Yoda. Well, I'm going to let you mosey because we got to get to the episode.
Yoda will mosey then.
have fun.
He does sort of mosey away, doesn't he?
Yeah, just kind of waddles.
Yeah.
Through the muck.
Waddles and mosey.
Well, remember, guys.
Mosey's just a slow waddle.
Well, remember, guys, we can always use your Yoda questions, so you can either comment on this episode at the Two True Freaks Facebook page, you can send them to me on Twitter at JGuysAndJedi, or you can, I don't remember my email, so do Facebook or Twitter. If not, just message me. I don't know. This is why we need a comment section. But anyway, Act 1?
Act 1.
Get ready. I haven't edited this or looked at it because I wrote this really fast. So here we go.
Awesome.
We open with the ghost crew, who are really cold right now. They're following up on intel on a possible fuel source, but they are running really low on fuel themselves. It's freezing. Kanan's drinking a cup of coffee. Their breaths are floating around. It's a tough situation all around, but it's super important. One shipment of this fuel could give the Rebellion a lot of gas for a full cycle. You don't know how long I tried to think of a joke about the Rebellion having gas, and I thought about it for like half an hour, and I couldn't think of anything. I mean, it was there, and I couldn't do it. Like, a full cycle's worth of gas, and I couldn't think of a joke. So disappointed in myself. Suddenly, Ezra hears something out in the vacuum of space, and he keeps hearing the same noise over and over again. And the rest of the space family is like, oh no, the cold is making Ezra go crazy. But he keeps insisting, no guys, no, there's a sound out there. And they keep blowing him off like, shut up kid, we're all cold too. That is until out in the asteroid field comes a flock of Purrgil, aka fucking space whales. And Hera's like, oh, I freaking hate these things. Brace yourselves, guys! And the Purrgil fly by like, hello, we're whales, hi, what's up? But they keep bumping into the ghosts like it's just another asteroid, and inside the crew is just like, whales! And Hera wants to blow them all out of the sky. But Kanan's like, nah, man, they're gonna pass. And Hera's like, no! I must fight them, because that's what spacers do. But they don't really have the power to fight the creatures, because they're running low on gas and they're all cold. So Ezra suggests that they should just fly with the space whales, not against them. And Hera's all miffed, but does that, and she pulls up alongside the space whales. And Ezra, the space whale whisperer, can't hear them anymore, as they're all just moseying along through space, like Yoda.
Oh, see what you did there.
As Hera and Kanan bicker because she sees them as a menace and he thinks that they're kind of cool, Ezra holds up his hand and the of the force can be heard very quietly. But suddenly the Purrgil are upset by something and they lift off and Kanan turns to see TIE fighters coming in. But they're really different TIE fighters. They're yellow and they start shooting at the ghost. And Kanan fires back, and they realize that the TIEs are not Imperial. And it's a really rough battle, because Hera's having to divert power back and forth from Kanan to Kanan just to fight two of these guys. But they end up defeating the TIEs. And Sabine says that they were from the Mining Guild. She tries to track where they came from. And Kanan kicks in the door to sass his space wife. And Hera has no fucks to give to her space husband at this time. And you can't see it, I'm flicking off my computer screen as if it's Kanan. And Ezra notices that the Purrgil are turning and wants to follow them. And Hera has no intention of doing that. Until Sabine says that that's where the TIE fighters came from. And Hera hates everything about this, but sets their course to follow the whales. What'd you think of Act 1?
It was pretty good. I just thought of something while you were reading that. In Disney Star Wars, I think is the first time that we really have to worry about power.
That's one of my notes.
Really?
Yeah, because I'll go ahead and read my note right now. Because that was my big note for this episode.
Oh.
Something that I'm wondering, well, not for the episode, for this part. Something I've been wondering if it's going to be a bigger ongoing narrative in Star Wars is lack of fuel. I started picking up on the story from, because I've been listening to like 7 new podcasts, and every one of them mentions like the lack of fuel in Solo, the lack of fuel in The Force Awakens, especially in The Last Jedi, there's a lack of fuel. And there seems to be some kind of shortage of fuel that's affecting the galaxy as a whole. Because we're seeing it pop up in various different things. I think they've even mentioned it in Resistance, how like certain places have lack of power and lack of fuel as well. So I'm wondering if they're trying to tell like a very subtle, bigger story that's set around not having enough fuel for the entire galaxy.
I don't know. I don't know if it's that or as much as it was just like I always assumed with Star Wars, whatever they had for fuel was like 0 point. It just pulled it out of another dimension. You know, it was never of like, we're running out of gas. And whenever there was trouble, it was like, the hyperdrive doesn't work or something is broken on the ship. And it's never like, we're almost out of gas and we can't, you know, this was the most practical of all of them, except for maybe as far as plot points go, and this and like the plot of Last Jedi where fuel was like a plot concern, but it was just something that never really heard about it in Clone Wars. And I don't know if that's just something they were like, we should, you know, hey, have we ever thought about how do they fuel their ships, and being like, you know, there's more of a chance for using it for plot if we have to get fuel and are running out of fuel, and these are the problems that could happen. So I wonder if it's something that just came out of a, you know, a plot meeting at Disney where they were talking about, you know, approaching it and being like, that's something that we'll start at. Cause I just put that all together, like listening to you talking about it. I'm like, you know, we never really had anybody who's like, well, we're almost out of gas and just floating in space, maybe in the comics here and there probably. Mm-hmm. But you know,
so I'm wondering if they're slowly setting this up, because if you put it in chronological order, like you're right, we don't ever hear about this in Clone Wars or in the prequels. But starting in about Solo, I think Coaxium, the hyperspace fuel or whatever, and whatever. Like, it kind of starts showing up there that there's kind of like this like shortage of fuel. And then in all these stories through like the original trilogy timeline, we're seeing it here in Rebels of like these mining guilds who we see is tied in with the Empire because they have TIE fighters and stuff like that. I'm assuming that this is all hope, just theorizing. I'm pulling shit out of my ass right now. So you could probably assume that the Empire is probably rationing this to help kind of like with their like foothold in the galaxy. So if you ration fuel, you kind of like control where people can go and how far people can go and stuff like that. And then probably when the Empire falls, you have places like the Mining Guild, who still has this foothold because they're a corporation. And that's probably something that they have to work out with the New Republic, which is why we're seeing it also showing up in, like, Resistance, that places like the Colossus, which is in wild space, like the far reaches of the Rim all the way out there. That's why the Colossus is so important, because it's a refueling station. It's the last stop before the Unknown Regions. It's why the First Order wants it, because it's a fueling location. And so you're seeing it come up there because it's looking like whoever controls fuel, it's part of the way that you can control the galaxy, because it dictates how far people can go, whether or not they can go to between planets. And there's just this narrative of fuel that's been coming up in Disney Star Wars.
Well, maybe it's
very interesting.
I was just thinking maybe it's because Disney Star Wars is having more like, okay, Clone Wars was in a high budget setting. It was with the army, you know, they have fuel stockpiled, you know, they have deals and they were, you know, they were a government buying fuel, so they didn't have to worry about running it. But now that we're getting into this universe, we're having more stuff on the lower levels, you know, and Rebels is like the gritty beginnings of the rebellion. So it's people who are just sort of, you know, it was a bunch of groups that were just sort of free improvising and putting together their resources to do whatever they were doing. So running out of gas is more of a factor, you know.
Yeah.
And the quote unquote rebellion in The Last Jedi is down to just dregs. So, and, you know, with large, bulky spaceships, and then they start running out of fuel. So it might be because of that we're seeing more stuff taking place on the working class level, on the run out of gas level.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a mini narrative that I've, like, as new, more and more new, because I think it's been mentioned in a couple of the books too, just like fuel shortages here and there, but I haven't read enough of the books to, like, really pick up on it. But I think it's a very interesting kind of, like, through line that they're kind of, like, drawing between all the new stuff. So yeah, but finish your notes, because that was my big note of this section. So.
This is going to come back up in Act 3, so I'm going to setting it up to knock it down in Act 3. Spaceships should have emergency insulated suits that they should wear, that they can wear when they have to turn off the heat, cuz it's freaking cold in space. So that's a realistic thing of, you know, if you don't have heaters just blasting in a spaceship, you know, you're going to freeze to death. So, but it would seem that most spaceships, that would just be sort of like having a life preserver on a boat. You know, you would have space suits or something that was insulated enough so you could wear it in case it was going to get like 50 degrees below zero inside your ship. Mm-hmm. But that's just a little nitpick. Total superficial note. I love the yellow ties. I like how they sort of have the, like, cut in half wings on them. It's really really sporty.
They talked about that in Rebels Recon. I just didn't note it. What they do is, by having that cut in, it gives them a wider range of vision, but they can't maneuver as well as a normal TIE fighter. So really they can only fly in a straight line and shoot in a straight line. They can't really maneuver. Right. So
I noticed when they had to do turns, they had to do wide, super wide turns, you know. But it was neat. Coloring them yellow was just a good visual shorthand to make them look. When you see them, you go like, those probably aren't Imperial, you know, because they're yellow. And my only other note is, Kanan's really getting into letting Ezra take the lead and giving him space and trusting him, and just sort of sitting back. And I think, Kanan's like, sort of like, you know, I don't really, you know, he can tell. I think I don't know if he specifically knows it yet, or he's just starting to pick up that, like, Ezra and animals have a certain connection. Mm-hmm. So he's just he's very comfortable with being just like, I vote with Ezra over his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Which might be another reason she wants to kick the Purgles. The Purgle. Sorry.
StarWars.com will correct you on that one.
Whoa, sorry, StarWars.com. I know you're listening.
Well,
that's all I got.
The rest of my super special notes are, just last week you were saying, and I don't remember the context, but you were like, man, this would have been nice if they had, like, animated.
They landed on that, like, ice planet.
Oh, yeah, and you were saying how it would have been nice if they had animated their breaths. And here they had it. Like, animated, and just like the whole opening scene with them being cold is just really nicely done. There's just like little details, like their lips are all slightly different colors, the windows are fogging up from their heat to the cold, and I like how, like, they have little subtle ways of showing that the ship's low on power, like the doors are not opening anymore. So, like, the whole, like, opening sequence is nice, how they're just animated and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's another thing that I noticed. I didn't write it down, but, like, I would have propped the doors open so they didn't have to keep using Zeb to open the doors for him, because it looks like Zeb's the only one who can open doors. I'd get sick of it and shove a 2x4 in there or something.
Shove Chopper in there and they just climb over Chopper.
Exactly.
And my only other note is kind of like in three parts. I just really like Hera's response to the Purgle versus the Jedi's responses, because Hera is being actually like, yeah, she's just like, I want to fucking shoot out the whales, and I'm so gung-ho about killing these things. But we find out, like, it's a practical reason. Like, you know, these things have killed her friends. Like, so she, and it, like, to her, like, this is probably what she's taught. You see Purgles, they're going to destroy your ship. So, like, I love how practical she's being versus the Jedi who's just like, nah, go with the flow, man. Follow the Purrgil. And she's just like, fuck you!
Purrgil huggers.
I know. I also do like how everyone's kind of picking on Hera, too. Like, it's a very great, like, space family vibe where they're like, well, what should we do? I don't know, but don't let Hera shoot them. Like, everyone is sassing Hera about wanting to shoot these things, and it's all really great.
And she's technically in charge, so.
I know. But, like, from, like, even, like, Zeb was just like, I don't know. Why don't we ask Hera what she wants to shoot them with? like, he says something along those lines.
Yeah. I think there's a certain, on a certain level, she's glad she's not allowed to shoot the whales, you know, but she just wants to make sure everybody knows that she wants to shoot those stupid whales.
Yeah, so I like it. And Space Mom and Space Dad have just the optimum amount of sass this episode, and they're just being like, Kanan is just being the best sassy husband messing with his space wife, and Hera is just being like the best cold shoulder space wife. I love it. I love everything about them in this episode. So, but that's all I had for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, let me take a sip of my water. All right, Act 2?
Act 2, this is actually my favorite act.
Alrighty. Act 2. Ezra sits down with Hera, seeing this Purrgil thing is making her upset. He says he's never imagined that creatures can live in deep space. Hera recounts all the amazing stories she heard when she was a child about all the myths and creatures in space. Some stories were about how Purrgil inspired people to develop hyperspace, but she doesn't think that they're amazing. The Purrgils crash into ships and run into hyperspace lanes. Hera admits that she's lost some friends that way, which is why she hates them so much. Ezra agrees with what Kanan said earlier, that the Purrgil just do what they do. And the alarms go off, and they see a planetoid with a crater. There's a green mist in the crater with a building nearby. It's the fuel refinery they were looking for. Hera swoops in the ghost and lands on an asteroid just above it so they can get a better look. They start making a plan with explosions and blowing up the unrefined fuel, and distractions abound so they can refuel on the platform. You know, their normal path of destruction. But Ezra notices something. The Purrgil are eating the gas. They don't know why the mining guild is shooting at the Purrgil in the first place. So Kanan makes a plan for them to glide in through the upper atmosphere and sneak in undetected. Zeb hates this plan, until he finds out that he doesn't have to do the plan, which makes him really like the plan. And Ezra tries to protest, but everyone is getting ready for the jump plan. Meanwhile, we meet Boss Yushin, who's in charge of the mining guild dudes, and he's a dick and he wants all the Purrgil to die. Anyway, back with the heroes. Kanan, Sabine, and Ezra pop on some helmets, and they leap from the ghost. Falling through the air, Ezra notices a Purrgil come up beside him, and he pets the space whale like a good boy before it flies away. Sabine uses choppers, boosters, to break her fall, and Kanan uses the Force. And Ezra tries and fails at the Force, but Kanan catches him and pulls him back with his Jedi skills. But the mining guild saw them and shoots at them. Just as Sabine is getting ready to blow up the gas, Ezra rips the detonators out of her hand and shuts them off, saying that they can't blow up the gas. And Sabine is like, Ezra, this is not the time to join the Space Well Humane Society. They get rid of a few guards so Kanan can hear Ezra out. Ezra knows somehow the Purrgil and the gas are related, and Kanan trusts Ezra on this one. So they stick Ezra with a big gun on a platform while Sabine and Kanan head off to secure a landing area for Hera. The boss and the guards rush out to stop them, and it's a fight! But they get a space clear, and Hera swoops in with the ghost, and lands. Meanwhile, Ezra booked the whale-watching expedition on this trip, and is just in awe watching the Purrgils fly in and out of the gas. And he's figured out that the Purrgil eat the gas, but no one else cares because they're being shot at! But oh no, one of the guards shoots Ezra, and he falls off the platform. Bum bum bum. What'd you think of Act 2?
This is my favorite act, just because I like the interaction, but I like, another example of animals starting to lead Ezra around, or Ezra you know, following whales. And I like that aspect of Star Wars. It's been developing a little bit since actually in the prequels. It was shown in the prequels that a few times that Anakin was particularly good at like calming down animals.
And same thing with Obi-Wan. Like
and in Clone Wars, yeah. But as we've gotten into Disneyland, it's more, you know,
it's more mouse ears and long lines.
Well, no, the animals are becoming more of a character rather than background monsters that get shot and run around. You know, there's and I'm an animal lover, so I like that aspect of it. You know, I mean, Last Jedi had, you know, the crystal foxes and stuff like that. So there's definitely more of a theme. I think that the connection with animals worked out best in Rebels here with Ezra. And I like having the connection and the communication, the Dr. Doolittle-ism with animals. So this, you know, this whole, the whole middle part with him, from him talking to the, you know, having a little space whale eye to eye moment and from the ship to, you know, to watching them and figuring out what was going on. I like that aspect of this a lot. Plus the space whales are really cool creatures. So, And I like the idea of space whales. So yeah, I'm all into that. Them flying with the space whales was very painterly.
I must say, like, I give them a lot of shit. And the reason I give the space whales a lot of shit is not because of the actual space whales. I actually really do like the Purrgil. I think they have a great design and I like them. I just still am not over the fact that Thrawn got beat by space whales.
We get to the truth.
It's both brilliant and I hate it at the exact same time.
Now we get to the truth.
It's so brilliant. It's such a brilliant move on Ezra's part. But I also think at the same time, it's so stupid. I love and hate it at the exact same time. I'll definitely talk about it in the finale because it is both like, I was joking with my buddy Gabby. And we were talking about how, you know, the Monty Python skit, the Spanish Inquisition, and they're like, no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes.
We wanted someone to make a gif of like of Thrawn, like Thrawn looking, and it's just like no one expects the space whales.
And then space whales.
Space whales. There's actually a part in the TV show Psych where they're debating whether or not like a whale has eaten a dead body, and there's a part where what's his name? Oh, he's the Lestrade character played by Timothy whatever his name is. But there's a part where he just goes and. Whale. And like that's what I kind of always think about too, just like and whale. You can't see it, but I'm putting my feet my hands together like teeth, like wow. So
I'm all about the space whales.
Yeah. But I do like separate from everything, I do actually really do like the Purrgil. I just think it's everything around the Purrgil that I have problems with. Though I don't have problems with Ezra having this ability. I think it's a very good ability to have. Because, like, yeah, like you said, like, we've seen it a little bit here and there. Like, this as Ezra's main ability. Ooh, follow-up question. Remind me to come back to a follow-up question about Kanan. I like that this is, like, Ezra's main ability, especially when it comes to creatures on his home planet, like the Lothcats and the Lothwolves, where it really, really makes sense and it really, really works. My follow-up question, what do you think Kanan's special ability is?
I think maybe only Hera knows. Oh, yeah.
I think it's his ability.
It's with the ladies. It's charming the ladies.
It wasn't a new Dawn. In a new Dawn, he was a slut. Slutty Kanan is one of my
favorite
Kanans.
There we go. Kanans. There you go. He's in touch with his feminine side.
I think his his special ability is his ability to improvise, which with the Jedi Order was so rigid and like you had to do things like so many certain ways, but he didn't get that. I would say, because almost every plan, they're just like, this is the new plan. And Zeb even says in this episode, like, we should plan to not have a plan.
Well, he probably did get a bit, you know, they probably do rigidly train the kids. But by the time he was out of the Jedi Order, the Jedi Order was gone. That was right at his rebellious stage. So there was no way, you know, if he was in the Jedi Order, they probably have a way, you know, they probably have special lessons for when... You know, the apprentices hit puberty and start being like, you guys are stupid and the Jedi Order is stupid and you're all hypocrites. But that yeah. was, you know, so he got to hit that part all on his own and nobody to squanch it.
And I would say also another ability, and this is a forced ability. It's not a natural ability. It's an ability that he learned. I think just flat out survival, like being able just to survive is definitely a skill.
Yeah, well, but that's sort of something by necessity. Even though you're making the separation between the skill and a superpower, it's still sort of, it's like a specific power, you know, with something. And it could be, Obi-Wan was really good as a lightsaber duelist, you know.
Mm-hmm. Anakin was a pilot.
And Anakin was a pilot, and Obi-Wan was a good pilot, but compared to Anakin, he was he didn't like he didn't like flying, you know, and yeah, so.
Yeah, and Qui-Gon was having a connection with the cosmic force, as we see, but like, I don't know if we ever get a specific skill that's, maybe a blaster? I would say a blaster might be a special skill, maybe. Like being able to use multiple weapons, not just a lightsaber.
Weaponry, yes.
Yeah. But even then, I wouldn't say that's a natural skill. It's something he had to learn from necessity. I don't know if we actually know Kanan's natural ability. Listeners, what do you think? I would like
there
to
you
hear,
go.
Listeners, I would love to hear what you guys think about this, because I'm torn between...
I've never thought about it before.
Yeah, I'm torn between his ability with a blaster, his ability to improvise better than most Jedi, and his ability to survive. Like, those are the three. But even then, like, two of those were from necessity. Yeah. But please continue with the rest of your notes.
All right. I've only got a couple more. The space jump scene, I think, was a tribute to the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. It's almost visually very similar in idea and presentation as the Star Trek movie. The first Star Trek movie. So I think that was like a little tribute, acknowledgement, visual tribute. And my only other note's another visual one. There's just some great long shots with a long shot with a tracking camera to track a laser when Ezra's shooting up at one of the people shooting at him, but he's, you know, he's quite a ways away. So you follow the laser as it goes across the whole station and is hitting around that guy. It was just very pretty visually, and you could see the beam like lighting up the scenery as it moved from. It was just a very nice visual shot and a nice illustration of the layout of the place and the distance, you know, from one thing to another. It just had a really good spatial feeling to it.
Yeah.
That's all I got, though.
I'll do my three shallow notes, and then my big note for this one. I agree. The jump sequence is probably one of my favorite in all of Rebels. Like, I could remember two things from this episode. The jump and the space whales. That's all I could remember from this episode. But, like, the jump scene is, like, just from, like, the tracking of, like, them running off the ship and then jumping, and then, like... I remember in the trailer, and I think that's what helped, because I watched the trailer multiple times, and there's the trailer of their three helmets as they fall across the way, and so, like, I really love that scene a lot, too. Again, there's some wonderful space family snark in this episode. I love Kanan's Lothcat helmet that's being painted. Like, I'm not a Star Wars helmet person. I'm just not my jam. But if I had a Star Wars helmet that's a Stormtrooper helmet, I would want it to be the Loth Cat helmet. Because that's just, I love his Loth Cat helmet so much. It's just, it's so cool looking and it's adorable. And the fact it's a Loth Cat and I love Loth Cats. I love that helmet. And then my big note, one of the reasons the first time I watched Rebels and this episode came up, I was still in my I'm not a fan of Ezra phase. And one of my issues with this episode was how protagonist-y he was. And now the second time through as I'm rewatching it, this is changing because I love Ezra now. A lot of the stuff that I used to have problems with is really working. And a good example of that is last week with Zeb's episode. I used to have a problem with that episode, but I really love it now because it makes sense that Ezra was there because he had just got confirmation that his parents were dead. So he was someone who could, like, commiserate with Zeb and, like, not fully understand what Zeb was going through, but he understood a little bit. So last week it worked really well. I don't think it's working in this episode because, especially like the scene that kind of popped up to me was when Ezra is talking to Hera about the space whales. And I just had that moment of like, of course Ezra's talking to her about space whales. I kind of wish in that scene it was Kanan. I feel like Kanan would have been a much better place to be. Like after the kids leave, he's like, okay, Hera, what's really going on? And I would have liked that more. So it's just like little things that like in this episode that makes Ezra like extra protagonist-y. And I like his ability with the space wells, but there's just certain little things in this that they were saying how they didn't want him to have a superpower. There are times where it feels like it's a little too much and a little bit of a superpower. And it feels like it's just a bit too far to where he is as a Padawan, even though this is his natural ability. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess I don't really feel that way, but I thought it was fairly subtle for what it is, I guess.
Yeah, because for me, it's like a lot of it works a lot better for me the second time through, but there's still just little things here and there. And I'll make another note of one of these little things in Act 3, because there's a moment where I was just like, oh, that's hokey. But there's just
there was hokiness to it, but, you know.
Yeah, but like there's a difference between like hokey and then just like too far. Right. And there's a few moments in this episode to me where certain things with Ezra just feels like a touch too far. To where I feel that he should be at this moment. Though I will say I like that he had trouble landing on the platform, that he missed the platform because he couldn't use the force in that moment because he was panicking. That was really good because it helped balance out a lot of the rest of the episode of, like, he's not this, like, superpower kid that can, like, land perfectly on platforms and talk to space whales and fly on them. Like, I'm still glad that they added little things to show that he's still learning because it really helps balance it out.
Yeah, and he's not a dead shot with a gun either.
Mm-mm. Though I feel like Ezra wasn't trying to purposely hit people. That's just not really who he is right now. I feel like he was just trying to, like, draw their fire and just, like, keep
them shoot distracted. Their gun. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Ezra's a person to, like, straight up just shoot the guy in the face and be like, yeah, fuck you.
Right.
That's season 3, Ezra. That's when the blueberry has become the blackberry.
Yeah, because usually his blaster is just sort of his stun gun.
Yeah, like, we don't actually see his blaster kill people. It just stuns people. So I don't think that's where we are right now with him. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to finish this off.
All right, Act 3?
Act 3.
I'm going to warn you, some of my notes in Act 3 are just everywhere because I kept writing separate notes and then I kept moving them around. And I'm not talking about for, like, my act recaps. I'm talking about, like, my actual notes. So they're kind of all over the place because I kept, like, writing stuff and deleting stuff and writing stuff and, like, moving them around. So bear with me because...
We'll make it through.
Yeah, my brain was everywhere with this episode. So Act 3. Oh, God, Ezra fell off the platform. But in the heat of battle, no one notices. They're all fighting the guards and pushing fuel reserves onto the ghost. And they're also refueling the ghost so they can get the heck out of there. And the mining bros launch their ties, and the boss is barking orders at his men to fight. And as the ties swoop in for the ghost, Kanan does the most freaking awesome twist flip to get on top of the ghost to protect it. And it's awesome. I watched it like 3 times. I had to go and be like, damn, Kanan, that was awesome. And now, it's now this moment where Kanan realizes that his Padawan is missing. Ezra has fallen in the gas field, but he's not alone. He was caught by King Purgle, first of his name, Lord of the Space Whales. I love that joke. Ezra wakes up and gasps for air, unable to breathe the gas as his helmet slips away from him. He collapses and slides down King Purgle's face until he's looking him in the eye. And in his eyes, Ezra sees hyperspace lanes and understands that they want to help him because he wanted to help save the whales too. And I just realized it's the exact same as the Lothwolves. And that's a really cool connection.
Yep.
I just realized that when they're using the Lothwolves, the same thing happens to Ezra. So that is a cool thing. And the whales are nice enough to bring his helmet back to him so he can breathe. And Ezra struggles and puts his helmet back on to finally breathe again. And he thanks his new whale friends. But Space Family has their backs against the wall. They're almost fueled up, but they're getting attacked on all sides, and they have no idea where Ezra is. And surrounded by TIEs overhead and guards all around, their time is up. But luckily, Ezra is saving the whales! Because the Purgle fly up out of the gas and ram the TIEs out of the sky. And Ezra is now a whale rider, isn't Whale Rider a movie? I didn't Google it because I'm lazy to look it up, but I think
it is.
It is, okay. I was like, isn't there a movie called Whale Rider? But I didn't Google it because I was lazy.
He's sort of like Paul from Dune 2 riding the sandworms.
I have no idea what that means.
You gotta see Dune.
I know what Dune is, and I know what sandworms are.
So. The Kudwaj Hadarach.
And Ezra's riding on King Purgle, who has had enough of these mining bros shooting his whale people. And Hera has the ghosts all fueled up, and they have all the reserves, fuel reserves loaded up. And Hera kicks everything back on and is ready to fight, with Kanan still riding on top of the ship, too. And the mining bros are like, shoot the whales! And the whales are like, fuck you! And they attack the base, and they eat the big boss. And with some well-placed torpedoes, Hera shoots down the refinery without setting off the gas 5 feet away. But whatever, they won. King Purgle brings Ezra back to Kanan. And after a, who's a good boy, pet, the king flies away. Back inside, Ezra explained to Kanan what happened, that he saw into the minds of the whales and that the gas in the crater was used to breathe on these long journeys through hyperspace. And Hera admits that she's glad that she didn't shoot them all down at the beginning of the episode. And suddenly, the Purgle's tentacles start to glow, and they all jump into hyperspace, just like in the stories Hera used to hear about. And the Space Family are in wonder, and they head back to the Rebel fleet. The end!
Yay! Space whales are merciless killers.
I just love that they eat the guy, and then it just, like, drags him down to the mist. Just like, rawr!
They eat gas, and they eat people, too. Or creatures. All right. Just another minor note about the whales. I don't like that. It's just a minor nitpick. I think they should always keep moving, like in the ocean, like sharks, they have to keep moving. I don't like that they can sort of stop and hover over somebody and like tap them on the shoulder and be like, excuse me, chomp. Land shark, clomp.
Yeah.
But that's just a minor little nitpick. All right, here comes my knock it down from Act 1. All right. So, Ezra's on... in space, on the outside of the spaceship, right? In his outfit.
They talked about this in Rebels Recon. They're in a very low atmosphere, so there's still air.
Right, okay. It's freezing cold.
It's the same concept. They used the same concept where, was it a new... Which movie has the space worm that Han and Leia and the Falcon have to escape?
Okay.
It's that same concept that there's this planetoid with a space worm, but it's in a low enough... Like, there's enough atmosphere to where they can just walk around with, like, breath masks.
Okay. Because I was going to say otherwise, earlier on in the show, his outfit would have probably been warm enough if he was out in the vacuum of space with just his helmet and his outfit on. All right. Well, that explains that, I guess. That's all my notes for Act 3. I liked it. I love visually them jumping into hyperspace. I love that idea. I thought it looked kind of Star Trek-y, actually. They looked a little like parts of V'ger in the first Star Trek movie and stuff, and they reminded me of this space jellyfish from the first episode of Next Generation. Also, I wish your mom was here to hear what she had to say about Picard. The Picard trailer.
You know, knowing my mom, she probably hasn't watched it because, like, she's not a social media person. So, like, she might not even be aware that it's a thing.
You should send her a link. She's going to flip her lid.
Yeah.
It's full of Next Generation-y goodness that your mom will like.
Yeah. It'll probably take her about 2 or 3 weeks before it'll probably, like, come under her radar. And she'll be like, oh, wow! Knowing my mom. Because she's just not, like, a social media person. Like, she's not, like, actively following like Comic-Con and stuff. That's just not who she is.
But that's all I got for Act 3.
Since my notes are everywhere and all over the place, I'm just going to go straight down because I don't have an order.
Just pile into them.
Yeah. So rewatching this episode, again, it's better than I remember it. But there's still just, like I was saying in Act 2, little things that bug me. Like, I love that Ezra has a connection with the space whales, and I like that it's the same with the Loth wolves and has the same imagery. But it's so hokey that they, like, bring him back his helmet and, like, hold it out on their, like, tiny little finger. And like you said, like, the space whales just, like, come up behind the guys and, like, just taps him on the shoulder. There's just, like, I understand it's a show about space wizards. I understand.
Well, also remember, whales in like, whales, as far as our whales go, if these whales are sort of similar, They could be just as intelligent as Ezra, or more so. Yeah. They could be kind of Bendu-like, you know, for all we know.
Yeah. But, like, I understand it's a show about space wizards, but there's just, like, a couple, like, little things in this episode that's just, like, a little bit too hokey and just, like, a touch too far for me. But it's all just, like, little minor quibbles that are just, like, that it's one of those things that, like, it's a difference between, like, a 7 and an 8 when we're rating it. Does that make sense? Just, like, little things.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. All right. So, this episode is the Bombad Jedi of Rebels for me. If you are a new listener that started listening to us when we started Rebels, let me explain to you what that means. When we were going through Clone Wars and we got to the episode Bombad Jedi, Chris loved that episode. He praised it as Filoni being ballsy enough to use Jar Jar Binks. And Chris said that it was Dave Filoni giving fanboys the fingers saying, fuck you, I'm using Jar Jar. And yeah. It worked. Yeah, and it worked. And, like, Jar Jar in Clone Wars is great. He's a really great character. Like, he has clear development over the 6 seasons, and he's a really good character in the show. So, like, that's what I mean about it. It means that Filoni is saying, fuck you, I'm doing this. And that's what I mean when I say that. Now, I feel like this episode is similar, but the context of that, instead of being like, fuck you, I'm using Jar Jar, it's, fuck you, this is not a filler episode. Because Clone Wars was so episodic, especially in seasons 1 through 3, that there was a shit ton of filler in Clone Wars. Like, there's, like, stuff that comes back and characters develop over the course of the time, but seasons 1 through 3, there's a shit ton of filler in Clone Wars. Now, with Rebels, this episode, when you're watching it for the first time through, this episode could easily have filler written all over it. And a lot of fans did label this as a filler episode when it came out. But then we got the finale episode, which is why, like, that which shows why this episode was so important, that it was not filler, that there was no filler episodes in Rebels. And that, to me, felt like Dave Filoni going, there are no filler episodes in my show. Fuck your filler episodes, because there are no filler episodes. Finger. That's what I mean by it when I say that okay. This is the Bombad Jedi.
I didn't perceive that when I saw it, but I can totally see what you're saying. I totally can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, because this episode used to be on almost every worst episode of Rebels list, but after the finale, it jumped onto every must-watch list of episodes. And that's how I feel like, and that's why, like, when I'm going into Resistance, where I see an episode like Bebo, where, like, Niku finds a pet, and he's, like, taking care of this pet, I'm now hesitant to go, oh my god, is this like the call? Is it a filler? Right. I can't tell. It's because it's a Filoniverse show now. And nothing is actually filler. And we've actually seen that in the first season of Resistance. Like, an episode like Fuel for the Fire, where it's about, like, fucking Recklin. That bitch Recklin. That's what I call him. That bitch Recklin. It's all about this hyperfuel stuff. And that hyperfuel comes back later in the series. Like, there's yet to be really an episode of Resistance where it's a filler episode because everything has come back. And so that's how I feel that this is a Bomb Bad Jedi episode for me, because it's so easy to label this as filler until the finale, which proved that it wasn't. And it was because after this, like, Dave Filoni in Rebels Recons after this episode kept saying, like, yeah, well, I know, like, fans are saying that certain episodes are filler. And he kept looking at the camera going, there is no filler in this. And fans were like, whatever, Dave Filoni, there, it's a filler episode. And then we got the finale, and the space whales are important. They are, like the MVP of the fight. They're the reasons why Lothal is, like, saved. They're the reason why, like, Thrawn and Ezra are taken out of the picture. Like, they are important. And so that's where I feel like this is the Bomb Bad Jedi of Rebels, because it ends up that it's not a filler episode. It's actually a very important episode. Can you imagine if people skipped this episode and then got to the finale? They'd be really fucking confused.
That would be really completely random.
Yeah, and make they'd be no like, sense. What the hell are these things?
So. Not just that, but, like, the hyperspace aspect of it would have been very, very strange.
Yeah, so. But that's what I meant when I said that this was the Bomb Bad Jedi of Rebels.
Okay.
So, it doesn't make sense?
I didn't like it as much as Bomb Bad Jedi, though, so that's why it was different for me.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as... I liked it a lot better than you, but I wouldn't say I'm, like, excited about it, you know?
Yeah, so... my next note is, finale is what makes this episode better for me, and I'm still a little meh on it, like, though I do really like this the second time through, but I feel like I wouldn't like it as much if not for the finale, and that's why I enjoyed this more than I did the second time through. But Space Family sass is so on point this entire episode, like, the Space Family is perfect from beginning to end. In the concept of because we've been talking about all season, these transitional episodes of season two, about how, like, we're transitioning from who these characters were in season one to who they become in later seasons. And that's the whole point of season two, is we're getting these transitional episodes. I feel like this is more of a, we're touching base on Ezra's powers, but I feel like this is more of a Hera transitional episode than an Ezra one.
I wouldn't say it was, yeah, well, I mean, she definitely goes through more of a character transition of all the characters in this episode. I wouldn't say it's a major one for her, but Ezra's just sort of continuing on from where he's already sort of made the jump, and we're watching him take baby steps into it. This is just more of like story-wise, it might be a major breakthrough for Hera, because this is the first time she's ever thought of animals as, you know, or, you know, she's thinking of animals on a different level or dealing with a situation in a different way. But she's not really also one of the people to, like, jump to violence. So it's more like, you know, okay, you know, I never looked at it from the space whale's point of view, is sort of her leap. And that's a good character lesson for an episode, but I don't think it's a big, like, transition for her.
I think it's more along the lines of her instincts and what she was taught versus learning to trust what other people's instincts are.
Right.
Because she was taught that these things are a menace. They've killed her friends. She has a vendetta. And her first instinct was destroy them, get rid of them. But Ezra's first instincts were, oh my god, they're amazing. Like,
let's go check them out. Yeah,
let's go check them out. So I think in that way, like, it's her learning to trust the instincts of others over her own personal instincts and her own personal misgivings. And I think that's a good lesson for her to learn, because she's now a captain. Captain? She's a captain of Phoenix Squadron. She's not a general yet. She's now a captain of this. And like, and we might not see this lesson play out later in the show, but it's a good lesson for her to learn how to trust other people's instincts over her own, and letting her take a step back and go, no, my instincts are wrong here. You need to, you're right. So I think that's more of like the angle of the lesson, and that we might not see in the long run, but I think like she learned more along the lines of Ezra just were touching base with. My next note is just like another little gripe. And it's just some of the writing of this episode I wish was like a little bit tighter. And like the example that I kept going to was back in Act 2, the very first time that we see the mining boss guy, he was like, oh, the Purgles are back and they're here to eat the gas. And then we spend the rest of the episode watching Ezra go, I'm trying to figure out why the Purgle want the gas. But we as the audience found it out like very early in the episode. So I wish there was like some nicer, tighter writing where like the boss didn't say something like that. Because we know now for the rest of the episode that the Purgle eat the gas because the boss told us like 3 minutes in. While the rest of the time Ezra looks like he's just like, what do they want? What do they need? I don't understand. And finally in the last 2 minutes, he's just like, oh, they eat the gas. And I'm like, yeah, we learned that 18 fucking minutes ago.
Right.
So like just some of the writing I just wish was just like, like, that could have been a better reveal if they just, like, changed the boss's dialogue just enough to be like, oh, those menaces are back, and they're going to ruin everything. Shoot them. Like, that's all we needed other than him going, they eat the gas, for Ezra to go for the next 18 minutes going, what do they want with it? I don't understand. So I just wish some of the writing was a little bit tighter. Except for the space family sass, which is just excellent from beginning to end.
Good and tight.
And my last note is, I went back after I finished this episode, I pulled it up on YouTube, and I watched the Purgle part in the finale again, just because I wanted to see, like, between this episode and that one. And I realized something, and I'm kind of upset about it, actually. You know King Purgle? He's the one with the yellow head, and he's the one that Ezra makes the most friends with and saves him, and he's, like, the leader of the Purgle.
Uh-huh.
He's not in the finale. Like, none of the Purgle have that yellow head. Like, none of them are King Purgle. This is his only appearance.
And maybe his head is only yellow during the mating season or something. Or,
well, I also
maybe he was about to shed or something.
Well, no, I looked it up on Wikipedia. This is his only appearance because I wanted to double check it just to make sure I wasn't like, because there's so many Purgle in the finale. I just wanted to make sure I didn't overlook him. But I thought it would have been a really nice callback that, like, King Purgle is the one that comes to Ezra, and he is the one that takes Thrawn and Ezra away because he has that special connection with Ezra. And that would have been a very nice callback to this episode where Ezra's like, hey, it's my friend. And Thrawn's like, what the fuck is that? I just thought that would have been a very nice touch to bring King Purgle back for the finale if you're going to create this, like, amazing designed Purgle with the yellow head.
That can travel through hyperspace so it could get there, I guess.
Yeah, so, like, it just would have been a nice touch for them to bring King Purgle back in the finale. But they didn't, which I feel like was... It would have been such a subtle detail, like, they didn't have to have a big thing about it because they were in the middle of the battle anyway, but, like, fans would have been like, oh, it's the Purgle from the thing! Yeah, that's Ezra's friend! Like, it just would have been a nice callback.
Yeah, it would have, and even if they didn't notice at that time, maybe on subsequent views, it would have been something to notice. Yeah, it would have... Yeah, and they have a model for him, so they might as well have, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask him what they were thinking.
Yeah. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
Score it up for me, Chris.
Well, unlike Bomb Bad Jedi, I liked this episode the first time, and I liked it the second time. But it's not, like, one of my standout episodes. You know, I don't want... I definitely wasn't going to get it in the 9 area, but I love whole, like, talking to the animal, making animal friends shows in almost any context. So I'm giving it a good solid, like, the last few episodes, 8.5. Oh yeah.
For me, like, It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
For me, the finale makes this episode better. Like, that's what enhanced this episode of me going, like, knowing what happens in the finale makes me go back and go, okay, like, this is an episode that's important. But that said, it's just, there's so much just, like, little things. Like, I do like seeing Ezra's powers are growing. And this episode's a really pretty episode. Like, it's a gorgeous episode the whole way through. And there's so many nice, like, little animation details from them, like, being cold at the beginning to, like, the jump to the fight. Like, there's a lot of really nice sequences in this episode. And this is some of the best space family sass that we've gotten into the show. Like, this feels a lot like season one when they're all, like, bickering a lot more. And I especially love how they keep on picking on Hera for wanting to murder animals. But, like, it's still just, there's little things that just make it a little bit too much for me. I think Ezra is still just a little bit too protagonist-y. I wish they would have used him in slightly different places. So overall, like, it's just an okay episode that's only made better with the finale under our belt. So I gave it a 7 out of 10, which is my average episode score.
It's our biggest spread in difference in a while, in a long time.
Yeah, so. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Facebook page for our episode of Stealth Strike. Take it away, Chris.
All right, the first one comes to Aaron Henley, who is putting out podcasts again. So
yeah, congrats, Aaron.
Tangents abound. Check out Aaron Henley. Okay, Aaron Henley says, this is such an important episode. Kanan is finally able to bring some closure with Order 66 and the clones. From here on out, he trusts Rex like one of the team and not with the aura of suspicion he's had prior. Plus, Rex in trooper armor looks just as awesome as his clone armor, and I never get tired of his back in my day comments regarding the stormtroopers. Yeah, it was neat seeing him in the stormtrooper outfit, and it's just like the slight differences. It was just, yeah, that was a great visual moment.
He's so comfortable in his clone armor, but he's like constantly like pulling at like his pants and stuff. Yeah.
Well, it had the difference between clone armor and his armor, and plus the difference of like the years haven't been as kind to him as he would like.
Yeah. For this next comment, in the episode Self-Strike, I had asked if anybody listened all the way through to the end, because, like, we always talk about, like, where can people find us, and I was just wondering in general if anybody listened all the way through all that, if they were, like, normal listeners. So that's what this comment is in reference to.
So we got one here from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
Episodes like this are very enjoyable, especially after watching Clone Wars, reading Ahsoka and Thrawn.
Yeah.
Also, I am one of the people that listen to the end of the podcast to the point that I hit the old movie or TV reference of some sort concluding the show. This show is brought to you by the letters F and U. LOL is one of them, and the radio guy thinking he's off the air and says, that ought to hold the little bastards. Or, it's on the tip of my tongue, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, wait, Henry Dumbass. Yeah, I've heard those a few times. LOL. Anyways, I did hear about that special guest next week, which was a few weeks ago. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And just to say that the show is brought to you by the letters F and U. That's Scott Gardner's son, Scott Jr., Scotty, who is grown up and married, so I don't even want to call him Scotty anymore.
I know, he's not a little babe anymore.
He's a Scott now. He's now a Scott.
So, do you still use the Killjoy one every once in a while?
Yes, I do.
And the All Right Children. Yes, yeah.
I haven't used it in a while because I have to convert it. It was weird. On my old computer, I could use MP4. It was an MP4 file for some reason.
And, probably because it was from a CD soundtrack.
Okay. And on my old computer, when I was using my editing program, I could use MP4s. And now I can't use MP4s. And it's the same exact program.
Is it Audacity?
Same operating system.
Is it Audacity?
No, it is not. It is Audition.
Oh, okay. Because for Audacity, when I had to go do an MP4, I had to download like a new like kind of like load-in thing. So for me to edit MP4s for my project that I can talk about now, even though it's been out for a few weeks already, I had to use it for the Lucky Leku.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And also, just for anybody knows, you can convert pretty much video and audio files on the VLC player. Is very good for converting an MP4 to a MP3 or vice versa, or WAV files or whatever you want. But that's how I do it.
Well, you ready for our favorite part?
My box of candy's kind of buried. I got it.
What about the crunchies, the chocolate crunchies from the Philippines?
That one is right in the middle and looking right up at me, so...
Cool. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris is a strange bird and he doesn't like American Kit Kat. So our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review. And today we have the chocolate crunchies, which is from the Philippines. And on the package, it's...
Golden honeycomb wrapped in Cadbury chocolate. Golden honeycomb.
I like the sound of golden honeycomb, let me just tell you.
It smells wonderful. So it's kind of like a golden purple LSU looking... I don't know why I said LSU. It's not like I watch fucking football. But it's like purple and gold packaging.
It's good. It's more like a caramel-flavored Butterfinger a little bit.
Yeah.
The honeycomb's very honeycomb, but when you chew on it, it gets kind of chewy, you know? It's that, instead of the flaky Butterfinger, but...
It's kind of like that air wafer on the inside.
It's got two different... It's got, like, two side panel wafers and then the middle honeycomb wafer. Did you notice that? It's almost got, like... two wafer walls.
It's very sweet, though.
Yes, it is. I'm only going to eat about half of this.
I'm going to eat, like, a quarter of it. Because the chocolate's really good, but it's really rich on top of, like, the honey flavor, and then it's just super sweet.
I'm trying to think of the name of the candy. But there's a local candy that's mostly from Buffalo. I'm trying to remember the name of it, and this is very much like that.
That was really good. That was super. I don't like super duper sweet candy, so. But that was still really good. So thank you, Dario.
Sponge candy. That's what. This is very much like sponge candy, a local delicacy.
Sticking to my teeth.
Did
you have anything else, Chris?
I did not. Just a mouthful of candy.
Well, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website, and it is located at twotruefreaks.com, the website. Someday it'll be Two True Freaks, the website, the movie. That'll be exciting. You can also find us on Facebook, where we have the Two True Freaks podcast, where we post all of our shows. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can sit around and shoot the shit. You can go subscribe. Well, you can subscribe to our podcasts either in whole or individually at the Two True Freaks site or off iTunes. And we are also on Twitter. I almost said Tumblr. Which we used to be on Tumblr. I probably could still... There's probably an old Two True Freaks account still on Tumblr somewhere.
I used to put the shows up.
And, but... I don't want to get them confused. I want to send them over to Twitter. And that is run by... Probably the king of the Two True Freaks podcast. Because he's probably the only human being who's absorbed... every Two True Freaks podcast into his ear well. And that is Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm going to see if I can do this with my Coke can. Gene, that was bad. Okay, Coke like cans don't make really good instruments.
But he runs our Twitter, and he does actually listen to every single Two True Freaks podcast, and if you're new to Two True Freaks, just spin on over to our website and you'll see how many podcasts that is. And that ain't all the podcasts he listens to, too. He's crazy.
I don't know how he does it, because I'm like, I listen to it probably like, I've been trying to dive in
50 times speed. That's how.
Yeah, because I've been diving into a lot of new podcasts too. Like, Oh, some of the new podcasts that I would, if I had a, can suggest some podcasts if you're looking for some good shit to listen to. Friends of the Force, which is great because they have a, it's a one guy and he has a rotating set of guests. The Knights of Ren, spelled W-R-E-N, like Sabine Wren. They're really fun. I've talked about Lousy Beautiful Town before. Sky Talkers did a really great run of season one of Resistance. That was a lot of fun. Sky Talkers came up with a wonderful like analogy of how Resistance is like a pot of spaghetti. And it's weird, but it makes so much sense in the context of listening to all their Resistance episodes. And then I've also, I was recently on Lipstick and Lightsabers, which, so if you're looking for some good Star Wars podcasts, check out any of those guys, because I've been really enjoying them, especially Lousy Beautiful Town, that's the one I went through the most. Though, I will say Lousy Beautiful Town might not be for everybody. It's, it might not be everyone's cup of tea, so. But they had a really great episode that I listened to today about Star Wars and mental health. It's episode, where is it? It's episode number 10, and it's called An Emotional Support Ewok is Just a Friend. And they talked about Star Wars and mental health and the lack of mental health in Star Wars, and then they discussed...
complete lack of it.
Yeah, and so they were talking about how, like, how they could show that, like, someone like Leia, who never, we never got to see her process losing her planet. And they were talking about how someone like Jin has probably the best journey of mental health portrayed from beginning to end, because she was running away from it, putting it off, and then she had to address it. She was showed, we saw her grieve, which we don't get to see characters grieve. And then she got to like pick herself up and then go act on it. And they were like, Jin probably has the best like journey of mental health. So like they're really cool because they talk about like a lot of fandom stuff too. I really also enjoyed their episode 9 where they did their 20th anniversary of The Phantom Menace. And the title of that episode was Serial Killers. They were still kids once. They also
yeah,
just
there was a episode. There was a low budget movie in the 90s called Even Hitler Had a Girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, they have the best episode titles. My other favorite one is Ray Has a Big Fat Dick.
Oh.
That's they were talking about like how people that have been queer coding Star Wars characters, and like their guest on that week is a transgender woman, and she was saying like characters like Rey, like she could see Rey like being coded in a way and stuff like that. They also had a
It's what I've said about every Star Wars character that we haven't seen their genitals, which is pretty much every Star Wars character.
Yeah.
At least that we know of. There could be aliens that have their genitals hanging out all the time. We just don't know that they are. But you don't know what's up in the Star Wars universe, you know? You don't know if everybody's all sorts of weird flaps and folds and combinations of genders and identifiers and stuff. Then they just don't care or what the deal is, you know?
If I could also suggest, Friends of the Force had a great episode called Asexuality and Relationships in Star Wars, which was a fascinating episode about how, and they gave a lot of good reasons of how like they could see Luke being asexual, because he really doesn't show any interest in anyone. Like,
that's
even,
because the first time he gets anybody to show any interest in, it's his sister.
Yeah.
Speaking of mental health.
Yeah, and like they were saying like Luke never really like, and they did touch on Legends and Mara Jade a little bit, but like they mostly stuck to like current canon.
Luke
but they
got
did talk
to reconcile
about Luke
the stuff with his father, but there was plenty else for Luke to, you know.
Yeah. So
to
if
get
you're
where
for
he was
some,
in The Last Jedi.
If you're looking for some good Star Wars podcasts, those are some of the ones that I've been delving into recently, and I've been really enjoying them, so.
Dude, that one was good. It was starting a conversation right at the end of the show, just talking about the podcast. So there you go.
Oh, I should probably tell where people can find me.
Yes. That was a question, Hope.
I'm sorry. Well, you can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can find also, I'm so sorry. This is the day we're recording this, the day before Thrawn Treason has come out, and I'm so sorry about all the Thrawn shit posting I've been doing about the last week. I'm sorry. It's Chismas in July right now. We're having Chismas in July.
You're not sorry at all. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Like, it's Chismas in July right now. So anyway, at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. You can also find me at Hope Mullinax on Twitter. I have a website called geekygirlexperience.com, and as you guys have heard recently, because I'm putting it up this week, so by the time this episode comes out, it's already out, I have made a podfic on our thing called The Lucky Leku. You can read it over on Archive of Our Own. I'm currently working on Chapter 3 right now, and if you guys like the podfic, let me know. I did it more just to practice editing, but if you guys like it, I'll make future chapters into podfics if you guys want me to.
I want you to.
Okay, well, Chris wants me to. Chris, the artwork
saves me a lot of work.
Chris, the artwork is so amazing, guys. Chris did the episode art for it, except for Elisa. My buddy Elisa did the actual drawings of the three Twilight.
I was gonna say it was a collaborative effort. The main Elisa... piece of actual artwork of it is done by her, and I did a cut and paste of it into something else.
Like, together, it looks amazing. And I also have a fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fan fiction, if you need to get your Thrawn thirst on. I would assume most of our listeners are men, so they probably don't. But yeah, you can find all that in an archive of our own under the name Chaos Lydia.
They might like Thrawn, but not in the way you like Thrawn.
You know, it's written to be a drama.
Or maybe
so
they
far-
do, I don't know.
Yeah, it's written to be a drama. It has Cad Bane in it, too. Cad's in it, and I really enjoy writing Cad Bane. Cad Bane is like one of my favorite characters to write. So yeah, I have a lot of fun with that. Next week, I would say for next week's episode, if you get a chance to go back to Clone Wars and watch the episode Innocence of Ryloth, and if you get a chance to watch the whole Ryloth finale of season one, do it. But I would say particularly watch Innocence of Ryloth, because we're going back to Ryloth this week, next week. And there's a little girl in Innocence of Ryloth who's a tiny, adorable person who interacts with two clones named Waxer and Boyle. And she might just come back and be a badass fucking rebel fighter next week, along with Hera's dad, Sham Syndulla. Come back next week and see.
She just might. Maybe not. Maybe Hope's just lying and making it up. But either way,
I love Numa. I would never lie about Numa, because I love Numa so much. I loved her in Clone Wars. And when I saw her in the season 2 trailer, I was like, Is that fucking Numa? And then like Star Wars was like, yeah, that's Numa. And I was like, it's fucking Numa! And then I cried over Waxer and Boyle, because they're dead.
R.I.P. Waxer and Boyle.
R.I.P. Waxer and Boyle. Bye.
They got waxed and boiled.
Oh, God.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Life of kids, I don't know what's going on now.